Okay, so we'll get underway. First of all, hello to everyone. I hope everyone's having a good time so far. This is the Beat the Clock panel. We'll do quick introductions. You may have already heard us say this a couple times already. And then we will talk a little bit about aspects of deadlines and dealing with regular life along with the writing life. And when we're not in these glamorous, you know, seats up in front of you, how we, you know, just go on as normal human beings, as I heard Paul say the other day. And then we'll open the floor with about 15 minutes left and get some questions from you guys and comments and do it like that. So, Anton, I'm going to start with you.
Sure. I'm Anton Strout. I read the Simon Kander series for Ace Books. I also work for my publisher, which is Penguin, out of New York. I work in their sales department, so I have way too much access to my own sales information, and which will all figure into meeting my actual deadlines. The fact that my editor actually is right down the hall also is a big impetus towards making my deadlines, as while she's tiny, she's scrappy, and she's got like really thick heeled shoes.
Does she say something like, "Strout, where's the book?" as she goes by?
Kinda.
Does she do that?
Okay. That does happen. But, and when not selling my books to all you lovely people who are very enthusiastic throughout the days here, I'm trying to maintain a day job and write.
My name's Don Bingle. I'm a gamer from way back. I started writing game product, eventually got into tie-ins and short stories, and now some novels. And other things. I also, yes, have a day job as an attorney. Please do not hold it against me. I want to get away from it just as fast as you want me to get away from it. Onward.
Okay. My name is Gregory Wilson. I'm an associate professor of English at St. John's University in Queens, where I teach fantasy fiction and creative writing, among other courses. That's my day job. I am also increasingly a writer. This is my first novel, The Third Sign, which came out last year from Gale Cengage, and was just optioned for a film within the last month, so that's cool. Thank you. I have other books that are currently out at publishers that my agent is shopping for me. I also am co-editing an anthology of speculative fiction and politics with some members of the Writers' Symposium, among others like Joe Haldeman and Barry Malzberg and Nilo Hopkinson and people like that, so we're pretty excited about that. And the only other thing to mention, since everyone else has been doing it, is that I do have a few books left over for sale, and I'm not doing any more signings, so if anyone's interested, you can come talk to me, or actually any of us who all happen to have books around.
Yeah,
I can't imagine why we all have that. Maybe we'll talk about that in this Beat the Clock thing later on.
Sir?
I'm Tobias Bakel. I'm a Caribbean-born science fiction fantasy writer. I've Tor Books has put out a few of my novels, Caribbean science fiction, and I've written a tie novel for the Halo universe for the folks at Bungie, which did really well. And I've published some 35 or so short stories in various magazines and anthologies and freelance and do this sort of thing since 2006.
Cool. So I guess what we should probably start out by asking is, how do our, you know, day jobs affect what it is that we do? How do they impact us dealing with, like, writing deadlines and things like that? Do our jobs help or hinder? I mean, I guess we made some suggestions about that, but maybe we can talk a little more in depth about how it helps, hurts, and so forth.
It pays the bills.
Well, that's true.
So that's important because you got to pay the bills, and it's really hard to pay the bills as a full-time writer, especially when you're starting out. You know, people at work know I write. People at work should know, but sometimes don't seem to know, that I don't write at work. I'm very careful about that. I never write. I don't write during my lunch hour. It would just be a complication for work to deal with. Consequently, I am not one of those people who writes every day. I write on occasional weekends or holidays or days off. And when I write on those days, I write all day, and I write fairly quickly, so I can still turn out product and meet deadlines on a pretty good basis. But you know, you have to write in the in the chunks of time that work for you and your schedule and your other commitments.
I write. Since my day job is kind of at my publisher, I think they assume I write at work at times, and I don't deny that, nor do I confirm it with them. I just think that they assume that if there is a deadline, that they should leave me alone at my day job. As long as the day job stuff gets done, they're still happy, regardless of how I manage my time there. I do tend to try to write around lunch. I just recently moved from Manhattan out to New Jersey. So now I have an hour commute in by commuter bus from my development and an hour commute back, which is my perfect mulling, making notes, and or editing as I go time. Because I have an hour where I'm captive, where if I don't fall dead asleep, I am trying to move forward on books.
I'm kind of, from 2000 to 2006, I was at a day job and wrote on the side. So basically back then, I used to write late at night and in the evenings and during my lunch break. And my guaranteed time was during my lunch break. Nowadays, the way I chop things up is I make a full-time living freelancing, writing, and so forth and so on. So, I mean, there one way to look at it is that the freelancing income is kind of like my day job because that pays the best. So, you know, it does tend to get weighted a little more importantly than the fiction. But it fluctuates from month to month how I'm setting up my schedule. Right now, basically, my schedule is that I'm usually, since I'm a late night guy, I also need a lot more sleep due to some meds I'm on, which affect me. So I'm usually up right around 9:30, and I write until noon. And I take a lunch break, and that's fiction. I'm working on a novel that is due in a couple months, so I'm working on fiction till lunch. I usually take a break at lunch to see other people because I live at home and I freelance by myself. And so I've learned over 4 years of freelancing that, you know, deadlines are important, but what happens sometimes is I disappear for 4 months. And people in town will suddenly see me after a deadline and go like, oh, I thought you'd moved. So I do take the
and you grunt at them having forgotten to speak.
Yes, you know, unshaven, hair's long, you know, wearing raggedy shirts. Literally, I'd once rolled out of bed and was literally like unkept hair, unshaven, bleary-eyed, because I'd been working, you know, all night long and had gotten 4 hours of sleep and went to the grocery store to buy some basics. And somebody looked at me and went, you know, like, good grief, where have you been, you know? I thought you'd left town, and here you are looking like you just escaped a basement somewhere, which is exactly what had happened, you know, a basement of my own design. So I go out and meet people for lunch and say hello and be social and a human being. And at 1 o'clock, I go back to my office, and I will work until about 3 or 4 o'clock. At which point I do freelance work from about 3 or 4 o'clock until 6, and then dinner is ready, and the twins are home, and demands are made of my attention, and that's pretty much when I knock off. Which sounds like Neil Gaiman has this famous quote, which was, "You didn't become a freelancer or an artist. I didn't become an artist to keep an 8-to-5 schedule," which is a wonderful quote. And for years, my preference was to work from midnight until collapse. Which was my schedule, and that just doesn't work for me anymore, just due to physiological changes in my body due to the medicine I'm taking. For some reason, it seems to like a 9-to-5 schedule, and that's basically what I keep, which sounds absolutely bizarre for me to be saying and admitting, but for over the last 3 months, I've just fallen into a very natural 9-to-5 schedule. It's not because I have twins. They're a year and a half old, and for the first year of their life, I actually kept a midnight to 3 a.m. writing schedule, but...
Yep.
For some reason, right now, my golden hour has switched due to pharmacology. And basically, one thing I do is I keep a very I'm a nerd. This is not going to come as a surprise at a convention like this. Mm-hmm. But I keep a spreadsheet of how many hours I worked and how many words I've written for each project. And I log whether it was easy writing, like whether it felt easy to me to write, or whether it was pulling teeth. And I also log, how effective the whole process was. And so what you can do is very quickly build a look at where your golden hours are. Because sometimes, you know, it takes you 3 hours to write 500 words. And if that keeps happening and it's always at the same time every day, then why waste that 3 hours just getting 500 words written when you could just go play video games or something and be a lot happier? And then you find out that, like, you know, okay, it used to be that 12 to 2 a.m., I could write like 1 to 2,000 words consistently every night if I sat down at that time. It was just very easy. And there were words that didn't require a lot of polishing. Well, now that time slot is 10 to noon. If I sit down and write from 10 to noon, I can usually write about 1,000 to 1,500 words. So it's like, you know, that didn't used to happen. That used to be a dead time for me, and the golden hour used to be at midnight. Now I sit down at midnight and try to work. I'll finish up around 5 a.m., and I won't have much. I'll have, like, a few hundred words. So it's like, all right, you know, this is what used to work for me, and, yeah, it was sexy and awesome to be up midnight to 4 because people are always like, you robot, you know, weird guy who stays up all night and sleeps in. And now it's like, as long as I'm up by 10 a.m. and I put in 2 hours before noon, I get a lot of work done.
Yeah.
Thanks, Excel.
Yeah. That is.
I keep track of it all in Excel myself.
Okay, good. I'm not the
not
only one.
Not those particular metrics, but my metrics are the... I know that my books all break down to roughly 30 scenes, mm-hmm. and every 10 scenes I know my breaks are. So I quickly plan those out, and I put down columns to check off. Done, first pass, second pass, notes for revision, section, and it's all Excel managed. Because
nice.
I need that. It's the only thing that keeps me lined up.
Yeah.
You people are I didn't become a writer to become a spreadsheet expert, okay? You people are frighteningly efficient, and I'm troubled deeply. No, that's amazing. I would not be able to do that.
We've left you a word.
You lost me at Excel. I was just like...
if you want to feel better, I don't do any of that.
Oh, thank God.
Right.
Thank God.
One thing that I started doing, because I had a fairly short deadline project a while back, was at the end of... wherever I was, I put the date and then the total word count, just so I could make sure that I was on track to meet my mm-hmm. my deadline. You know, as if you promise 95,000 words and you're, you know, at 20,000 words a week beforehand, you're in kind of deep trouble. So you need to make sure that you're keeping on the pace you need to.
Yeah.
But that's all I do. And I do not check word count until I have decided I am finished writing for the day, because if you're constantly checking work, you're just distracting yourself from the creative process.
Right. I think that makes sense. I mean, one of the things that you'll probably hear as we talk during the panel is that we all work in different ways, even sort of different nuanced ways, and all of them are reasonable ways to operate. I think the one common element that you're going to hear is the element of discipline, and I think that's extremely important. And Toby's a good person to talk about this, since you've gone from having the day job into moving into being exclusively a writer, where although there are deadlines, you don't literally have, like Anton's situation, where you have the editor right next door going, is the book done yet, type of thing. And one of the things that... Yeah, right, exactly.
You have time for conversation. You have time to finish the book.
Exactly. Are you eating? You could be typing when you're...
It's like you're flying my wall.
So one of the things that in my own writing process that I find interesting is that I come originally from an academic background. And in the academic background, one of the reasons that I was able to start... churning out books and actually start finishing novels that I started. And when I started, I was the greatest beginner and not finisher of novels ever. I have 10 openings that will knock your socks off, and they go for about 2 pages, and then I'm like, shiny things, and I go off to something else. And so one of the things that I learned when I went through and got my doctorate is you can't do that anymore, right? I mean, I have to complete a dissertation, which eventually became my first academic book, and you can't just be like, well, I'll just sort of, you know, when I feel like it and write a couple pages, because I have my dissertation advisors and my committee going, hello, and my mounting debt going, hello, also, which meant that I had to get out of graduate school and get a job and actually get, you know, start having money coming in. So I had to be able to complete the work. And finishing one book was enormously important for me, of any kind, because what it meant was that I had learned that I could do it, that I could complete a book. Not that I knew that I could write. The question was whether I could actually complete a, you know, novel-length project. Could I complete an extensive work and not just, you know, a paper or an article or something like that? And so when I wrote The Third Sign then, that was comparatively very easy in terms of getting it done, because I had a certain kind of internal clock that had been built in. You know, I need to have this much done. Even though this was before I was querying any agents, this is before I didn't have an agent, I didn't have a publisher, I didn't have anything. I just had this idea for a book. So it wasn't like someone was sitting there. I could have just stopped and never written anything again. And I think a lot of writers, aspiring writers, do that. They start and then they finish because no one is saying, you've got to get this done, you've got to get this done. A lot of what separates people who get published eventually from those who don't is that we actually finish. It sounds very simple, but we finish the books. We finish them in some reasonable time. We get them in more or less when we say we're going to, right? And that's very important, because on the other side of the table, whether it's an agent who's asked you for a partial manuscript, or whether it's an editor who has said, okay, I love this, I need you to, you know, fix this chapter and adjust these things and get it back to me by such and such a time, if you don't get it back by that time, those people are going to start thinking that you're not reliable. And from the human point of view, they're not going to be interested in working with you because they want people that are reliable and that will cause them to have one less headache. I'm sure Anton can speak to this. That goes on in every publishing house on a regular basis. So a lot of it is about self-discipline, and self-discipline is something which I was able to pick up through academic work, and these guys picked up in a variety of other ways, but it's sort of the common element, I think, that ties it together.
I mean, I tend to go for, I try to build up a bunch of what I call triggers for myself. I know that certain type of music is conducive to a certain, when I want to write a certain type of thing, if I put on the Matrix soundtrack or Fight Club soundtrack, some kind of like techno in a loop, it takes one part of my brain and puts it on a shelf in the background, and it focuses me in on certain things, and I learn it. So I have a whole like spreadsheet, of course, of triggers that work if I need to get certain things done. If I'm writing a first draft, I actually have television or internet radio on, because character details, as I'm coming up with them, sometimes, oh, look, there's Snooki on Jersey Shore. She's going into the book a little bit from something stupid she said. I was like, I'm constantly, I tend to write where I pull from the ether, but I know that's my trigger to get words. Again, it's the getting the words down part that's the important thing. And it's, to me, I'm like, I just keep a list of them, and I'm like, all right, what do I need to get done? Okay, what do I need to pull out? And it's like, there's all this crap in my toolbox, and I'm suddenly like, time to pull out the action writing scene, so I'm doing this activity while I'm trying to get it done.
One of the things that I think is important, too, that I'd be interested to hear what you all think about this, is when you set aside the time to write, that you distinguish that from time that you would, let's say, research. At least I do. And one of the reasons for that is that the internet is a very dangerous drug. Because it doesn't just stop for me with I have to check out, you know, this particular thing about what the effect of fire would be in a dormant volcano, which is this my second book that takes place in a dormant volcano. What would this be like, assuming creatures could live in such a place? And you start getting in volcanoes and then Google images and that cool things about volcanoes, and all of a sudden an hour later I'm watching videos about volcanoes. I'm like, this is going beyond what I really needed for the book, isn't it? But it's a volcano, so I'm going to watch more about the volcano. That's a very bad idea. So one of the things that's helpful, I think, is for me anyway, is to separate, you know, the kind of time that I'm using, where I'll take a couple of hours where I'm doing nothing but research, and then I take some time where I'm doing nothing but writing. And I am a momentum writer. I'm the kind of person who will take a little time occasionally to ramp up, and then I will just go, and then I can really churn out a lot of material. But if I'm sort of constantly getting these false starts where I'm like, okay, no, you know, then I'm never going to be able to get to the point where I can really produce something reasonable. As a consequence, I got recently a netbook so that I could write exclusively on the netbook. And one of the benefits of it is that I can go to, I live in Riverdale in the North Bronx in New York, and there's a place called Wave Hill, which is this beautiful old park that's been open to the public. And I can go there and take this, and it's got like 6 hours of battery life, this thing. And I can, you know, sit down on the Tuesdays and Thursdays that I write full, all during the day when our babysitter has my daughter, and I go there and I'm just writing, because there is no internet access there. It's just this beautiful, you know, maybe I'll turn on a little bit of like classical guitar is my music, not techno, but I use classical guitar, and that's it. And so it's really helpful to be able to focus on just the writing itself. So compartmentalizing these things can sometimes help too.
Yeah, I have a handful of friends that we all discovered Freedom at the same time. It's an app for OS X that basically forcibly shuts down all internet connections to your computer.
Ooh, that's evil.
It's called Freedom. You launch it. It's like, how many minutes of freedom would you like? 60. Enter. And then the only way you can get the internet back up is to reboot your computer, right? So like in an emergency, you can reboot your computer, but it's enough of a barrier. Like rebooting your computer is enough of a pain in the butt that like you're kind of like, no, I'll just stay doing this. And the only downfall for me is I do like streaming internet radio. I just find a techno station sometimes or a reggae station, right? I like dub reggae and techno are like my two triggers for writing because they have no usually there's no voice. It's hearing people.
Yeah, vocals throw me off.
Vocals
too.
Really throw me off when I'm writing. So techno and dub reggae both are usually guaranteed to not interfere. Or if I'm really getting esoteric, I'll listen to like Japanese hip hop, right? Or in another language, use another language,
okay.
Right? You know. So I plug into that with Freedom, and I lose my triggers. So
wow.
Fortunately, like the iPhone has really started to step up there. So I actually have the iPhone streaming internet music with my headphones plugged in while I'm actually working on a computer which has had the internet disabled.
Nice.
Which
I like that it's called Freedom. That's
but
good,
it's called Freedom, yeah, like and that. It's a great app because a number of my friends and I have been just sort of like, yeah, Freedom, man. It gets you – because it's that thing where you kind of like – you're writing and all of a sudden you go like, oh, I should – look up the details of how XYZ works. Like, oh, like what does a Harley whatever look like? You know, this particular type of bicycle. You're just mucking about on the internet. For me, I'm ADD, and so like the internet is a special kind of drug, right? Because I lose track of time really easily.
Yeah.
And it's not unusual for me to 4 hours later come up from air and realize that I've just gone down this really bizarre chain of just, you know, things. It's, you start out looking for motorbikes, and pretty soon you're looking at electric motorbikes, and then you're looking at battery technology, and then you're at, like, a Echo Green website. And from there, you're looking at, like, Dyson spheres, and then you're into, like, you know, mega projects, and, you know, suddenly you're, like, looking at a, you know, comparative skylines of skyscrapers that are going to be looking
up. You guys
up.
Getting this down?
Right, you know, and then, like, you're like, what am I doing? This isn't writing. This is just mucking about. So yeah, you launch Freedom, and there's the magic of something called TK, which is a copy editor's mark that says to come. In other words, like you'll fix this later. And the magic of TK is now I've learned for myself that as I'm writing, if I come up with something where I'm kind of like, ooh, it'd be really cool if this character who's French said in French to the character blah 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 blah, and you let the reader interpret it. You know, my instinct would be to go online and try and, like, you know, learn French, right? Which absolutely kills any forward progress you have. So now I just kind of like go, TK, French translate, following phrase, you know, parentheses, blah, 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 close parentheses, move on with writing.
And if you use a couple of initials like that that don't often come together in regular words or even just a bracket or something, then you can easily, when you're in research mode,
right.
So, okay, you know, search TK, okay, I need to look up motorbikes, blah, blah, blah. You can spend a lot of time, researching very inane little details that you want to get right. You know, I spent 4 hours one time trying to figure out if a VW microbus made in 1969 came with an FM radio standard.
Right.
And you know what? Google isn't real useful for that. And I finally figured it out because some guy was selling his 1969 VW microbus, all original equipment, and he had pictures. And I blew up the picture enough to see that it said FM on the dial. It was the only way to figure it out. I mean,
did you still remember where it was supposed to go in your book by that point?
Like, yeah, well, that's another story. But, yes, it did go in the book. Okay. But, I mean, you know, that was probably not an efficient use of time.
No.
On the other hand, I spent 4 hours also, cruising the web looking for the yields of Soviet nuclear weapons and whether the warheads were small enough to fit into a VW microbus, which I'm sure has gotten me flagged, by the way, by the NSA, and that's fine with me.
That in your environmental terrorism book, Don.
Yeah, well.
Go ahead, Anton. Sure.
And every so often, you will turn a book in, and your editor will come back to you with a note like, here it says Simon pulled out his insert amazing awesome gun here.
Yeah.
You want to explain that? And I'm like, no. It's clearly an awesome gun.
It's like it's irony, you uncultured fool.
I tend to also mark mine with, I do double dollar signs every time I insert a meta tag note. That way I just do a control H on double dollar sign.
Yeah, yeah.
Because nothing else in the universe would ever be double dollar sign
in
there.
Yeah, that's another clever one.
Then I can go through the book as I'm doing stuff, find those things quickly, and finally do the research.
Yeah.
I realize, to clarify my earlier statement about my process, I'll spend my day job mulling over research bits. Like, as the cool bits of the book are happening to me, I'm like, oh, I should check that out. So throughout my day, to break up the work day, I go and I research a couple things here and there so that when I'm on the bus, I handwrite in my notebook the gist of the scene with that research kind of mulling around. And then when I get off the bus, I go home, and I take my handwritten notes and put them into the computer, which is almost my first editorial pass of myself, which just automatically makes it a lot cleaner than my first flat-out typing pass. But I do kind of separate those out, and then if there's new stuff I need to research, I literally just put in the check it out later, because, man, if I can't wiki it, I don't want it. Like, I think it's Beth who is... Elizabeth Vaughn, our guest of honor, I think she might go down the road of madness, because I think she does a lot of big, thick book binders of research materials. And I'm like, that would be 90% of my year that I need to be writing the book right there.
What's ironic about that is that last year I was on a panel with Beth where she brought up your name as doing stuff that she couldn't follow either, about how that
we are opposite.
Completely
opposite.
Yeah.
Process. What works for her does not work for me, and what works for me does not work for her. She is flummoxed by the fact that, how can you just go and look up one thing about something? I'm like, because that's all that's happening in that moment of the book. I don't have time. To me, it's madness to go there. But that's her process.
You know, and you're talking about efficiency in ramping up to when you're going to write. You know, one of the, you know, look, there's a tendency when you're writing to stop at a natural endpoint. You know, you get to the end of the chapter, you get to the end of the scene, run out of things to say, whatever it may be. And I try very hard, once I've hit that point where I'm exhausted and I'm going to stop for the day, to go put in the next chapter heading and write the first few sentences, or at least some notes about what's going to occur in the scene. Because then my subconscious mind, over the period of time when I'm goofing off, watching TV, dealing with people at work, sleeping, whatever, I'm subconsciously thinking about those that start. And my subconscious is mulling on a start and not on how I finished the last chapter. And so then when I sit down, I can ramp up much more quickly than if I just stopped at the end of the prior chapter.
I think that's an excellent point. I do something similar to that. And I think another thing that's helpful to keep in mind that Don brought up is the mental preparation that's involved in this. You know, the more time that you spend before you actually are going to be sitting in front of your computer to start writing, actually thinking about the way in which the scene is going to be put together, the next couple of scenes, the next couple of chapters. I normally now do not super long, but usually like a paragraph per chapter outline before I start a novel, where I'll have that stuff laid out and then have it separate. I have two monitors at home, also being a geek. And so I'll put the second monitor, I'll put the stuff up on the second monitor so I can refer to it as I go along. But since I've looked at that, I usually will sometimes look at it in the morning before I go off to work to teach. And then I'm teaching, and I'm concentrating on teaching, but I'll find that between classes or during lunch or when I'm in office hours and if a student isn't come into office hours for a while or whatever, then I will actually be sitting there kind of going over in my head, thinking about the outline that I had looked at, what it is I'm going to be doing when I actually get back to the computer screen. And the advantage of that is, to go back to what Anton said about doing your first editorial pass, the more of it that you can do in preparation before you actually sit down and write, the more you'll actually be able to do in the writing itself. I'm often amazed when people sit down, tell me that they sit down and they're like, well, I just had this one idea, and I'm like, great. And they said, and I wrote it, and I didn't know what else to do. And I said, well, had you thought through about the rest of it? And the thought through thing, they're always kind of like, well, no, I figured I'm just writing it as I go. Well, I'm sure that works for some people, but for me, I need to have some kind of a roadmap that I've prepared for myself in my own head about how I'm, you know, imagining the world, the sort of writing to go. Sometimes the writing will shift. It will adjust. I won't, you know, if it turns out that the characters in the plotter sort of feel as if they're sort of going in a different direction that I like, I'll allow it to continue in that direction. I'm not slave to the outline that I've created for myself, either physically or mentally. But having it, at least, as a reference point, meaning that I've almost, like muscle memory, right? I've gone over writing it in my head. When I then write it physically, it's not, you know, it doesn't take as much time, and I'm able to write more quickly as a consequence.
And for goodness sake, if you have an epiphany when you're in your mulling time about how a scene should go or some bit of dialogue or whatever, write it down. Because you'll say to yourself, yeah, boy, that's such a good idea. I'm going to remember it. And you may remember it. You may not. But you may remember it, but it won't have the same color and the same power as if you took a few moments and wrote it. I write down all sorts of things on business cards. And every once in a while, I'm in a place where I can't write down anything, and I try so hard to keep hold of it, and it's just never as good as if I'd written it down
point.
I had the chance.
It helps to be a professor there where I can be like, you know, da-da-da-da-da. Now, consider that point in your notebooks for several seconds, you know, and I'm just, you know, writing it down. But most of the time, most of the time, yeah, that's true. If you have something, it helps to carry around. We've given this advice countless times, but it helps to carry around a notebook. I see many people already have them. That's cool. If you want to, you know, have the notes function on like a Windows mobile phone or on an iPhone, where you can just write it right on the screen, that's very helpful too. All of those things are good. The other advantage of having that netbook that I mentioned is I can go to a convention like this. Most of the time, I'm sitting in panels or running around or talking to people, a whole bunch of stuff, but I have it with me so that I can get some time to be able to sit down and write a couple of pages as well. And by the way, there's nothing more productive for me than having gone to a convention and being fired up with the adrenaline of meeting all these writers and being surrounded by people who are interested in writing and all that stuff. I find I come back and I am ready to go. And it's a lot different when it's like, you know, February, and it's just been kind of like sort of dreary. You know, that's not my optimal, you know, time. So I want to take advantage of what I have here, and having written some things, even a little bit, on my netbook is important. One other thing I wanted to mention, I wanted to ask what all of you thought about this, and then we'll, I guess, in about 5 minutes, we'll open up for questions. I have found, and I've heard most authors say, that consistency is what matters. Not even so much how much you write, you know, per given, whether it's every weekend or whether it's every day or whether whatever, but that you continue to write consecutively in those times. So if you write every Tuesday and Thursday, which is, I write Tuesday, Thursday, and one of the weekend days all day. Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, 3 days a week, 8 hours each of those days if I can get it. And I don't miss them because I can't miss them. It's critical to remain consistent. It's much easier when you miss one or two, you know, then all of a sudden it's that much easier to miss the next one because, you know, and then it sort of falls out of your schedule, barring emergencies and all that. But, I mean, to the extent you can, staying consistent has been important for me. So I don't know if you guys...
I took a little of the summer off mentally simply because I'm waiting on my editor for book four, and they wanted 3 proposals from me for the second series they want me to do, and I'm waiting to hear back. And I'm kind of dabbling, but right now I feel very nervous and adrift because without the consistency of the regular schedule and the regular deadline that must be met at the moment, anything I try to do, if I'm not consistent, I find I end up going, okay, where was I again? All right, I think I was about to get to that scene, and I have a note here from the other day that I wrote, but I don't understand my own notes. I do my notes of things that come to me. I send myself emails with the subject notes that when I go to Gmail, I can type in notes, and it brings up my entire list of notes for that project. Again, I'm geeking out with my Gmail, but that means my notes are everywhere
Gmail's
at all
cool.
times, as long as Gmail doesn't go down. but I tend to find that my re-ramp up, if I'm not consistent, gets horrible, because the momentum dies between sessions.
I assume, since you've already talked about the 9-to-5 thing, that you already had some consistency, but now it's really consistent.
Yeah. No, I used to write midnight to whenever, and it used to be these really big jags, and then I'd collapse for a while and be bored with the writing, and you know, then a couple nights later it'd be another big boost. And then a friend of mine, in the time that it took me to write one novel, had written two, and he had a family of 5, a full-time job, was getting a graduate degree. And I was just kind of like, basically like, son of a bitch. Just, you know, what in the world? And he was just like, well, you know, 365 days in a year, and he'd done, what was it, like 300 words a day, something like that. I think that comes out to the 2 short novels was what he'd done. And it was like, so like every single day you sat down and you wrote just 300 words, you know, and he's like, yeah. I was like, well, the math does add up, you know, like that's 100.
You checked in the spreadsheet to make sure that
100,000 words. You wrote 100,000 words by just writing 300 words a day, you know, and 300 words is not a lot of words, you know, when you kind of think about it, it's just a page. And I just started thinking, you know, if I just made sure I wrote a single page every day, just, you know, on during the same window, that at the end of the year I'd guaranteed to have a novel. You know, and I was just kind of stunned by that because my approach had been a lot more like the hare, and he was kind of like the turtle. And I was just sort of have an epiphany then that, like, I have more hours in my day than he does. So I was like, you know, if I write 1,000 words a day, how much would that be? That'd be like 300,000 words. That's like 3 novels. So this year I'm actually on track to do like 300,000 words of fiction if I keep up just doing like, 500 to 1,000 words a day. So,
one of the things I think you'll find is that when you get more time, and I mean, as an academic, I get much of my summer off, that you know, if you don't fill the time with productive stuff, the time will be filled anyway. You know, like, the time will end up being filled, and you get to the end, you're like, what happened to the last 2.5 months, you know?
Yeah.
And especially when you have family, you know, we both have kids. I have a 2-year-old, and we've got other things that we're doing, and yet, you know, I come to the end of it, I'm like, this will be great, I'm going to write this amount of time, and then you're like, wait a minute. So if I'm not being consistent with my own writing, the time can slip away, and it's not just that I admit, you know, I get out in mid-May, and I see this long stretch of weeks, and I'm going to get so much writing done. If I just sort of rely on that, I'm going to get to the end of that long stretch of weeks and not have done anything. So yeah. I need to be, in a way, even more consistent when I'm not in the middle of a semester, because I don't have the regular class schedule to kind of keep me on track. That comes back to that self-discipline part of me.
I'm the black sheep of the family.
Okay.
I am not consistent about how often I write. When I do write, I tend to write all day. And I'm very deadline-driven. And those may be third-party deadlines, or they may be self-imposed deadlines. You know, I promised a story for Mike Stapple's Chain Story Project, and then when I promised that in April, I told him I could have it up on my website in June. You know, Mike wasn't bothering me. He had other stories. He, you know, I could have turned it into June or July or August, but I told him June. And I always, always hit my deadline, and I always am exactly within the range for word count. That's a point of pride for me. And I told him I was going to have this by June, and so, you know, I got it done, you know, by June. And if I have a word count where I have to do a book in a certain amount of time, well, then I know that I do have to work every weekend and both days on the weekend, and I get my family's buy-in on that. You know, that, you know, I'm going to be busy all these weekends, and I'm going to take these two off because we're going to a wedding or whatever, but otherwise I'm going to be writing on those days. But I like big chunks of time when I write. I don't always have big chunks of time, or I choose not to spend them doing only writing. And so I am driven by deadlines and just will turn things. If you want a short story on a short deadline, I'll give you the short story you want on the deadline you want and the word count you want. But if you haven't asked me for that short story, I might just fritter away the weekend.
I'm curious. I know you guys have some strict stuff. I also kind of reward. I have to do a reward system at times for myself. Like I'm a big gamer. Right now I'm cruising through Dragon Age, and I still have to then get the downloadable content. In Dragon Age 2, I tested out at San Diego Comic Con, so I'll get the special weapon in the game when it finally comes out. And Lego Harry Potter came out like 3 weeks ago, and we finished it through 100%. Now we're on our second playthrough, so that my wife can get the achievement points on the Xbox and complete it a second time at 100%. And I'm trying to, like, I really have to dole out the amount of, like, look, I want to have fun. I want to have a life. I definitely want my books at the same time and the day job. And I find that I'm like, all right, if I get X amount of words done, that means that such and such a time is Dragon Age go for that night or whatever. Because I sometimes have to trick myself. Again, this is my whole trigger system here. Like, it's the type of thing that sometimes it's a reward. Sometimes it's a techno music. Sometimes it's, I can go down to Chick-fil-A and get that perfect little sandwich. Whatever it is, I'm busy tricking myself. It sounds very professional, doesn't it?
Yeah. The reward, I think, you're right about the life part, and that's the other thing I think that probably we would all agree on, is that it is, to my mind, I know there are writers who do absolutely nothing else but spend every hour of every waking minute of every day writing. As I understand it, Isaac Asimov is more or less like this. The problem for me is that I'm not willing to do that. First of all, I love my family. Secondly, I have some friends. Thirdly, I love music. I play in a rock band. Like, I have other things that I do. And as important as writing is pretty, you know, my family is number one, and right underneath that is writing, and music's a little bit below that, and then teaching, which I still love a great deal. But I have, and, you know, all these things kind of have to be put in balance. For me, I think if I did nothing at all but just, you know, write, and I didn't take time to play some games and hang out with friends and do things like that, I would not, in my mind, be as good a writer. I think I wouldn't be, for myself, I wouldn't be doing the kind of writing I wanted to do, in part because people who are reading the stuff that we write tend to be people who have some kinds of lives, who like to spend time with friends, play games, go to conventions, call me crazy, you know, do things that aren't just about reading, 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 and nothing but that. So to me, it's about balance, and I think that's where the self-discipline comes in. If you can be disciplined, like Don's talking about, and when you have the time, right during the whole period of time, then it gives you the opportunity then to take some moments and actually live the rest of your life when you're not doing that. So balance, you know, I think is very important. I think
you know, about that. And it's also important for you to assess what you want to do with your writing and where you want to go. I mean, if you're writing and you want to become a full-time writer and you believe that you can become a best-selling author and that's what you want to do with your life, well, that may require a different approach and a different commitment. I don't believe that I will ever make a full-time living writing. And I'm old, that's okay. You know, if it went that direction, I would go with the flow and I would put in more time, but I don't need that to feel, you know, that I've accomplished something in life, I guess, or to be happy with myself. And so I will, quite frankly, take a more relaxed approach to it. Get published, that's great. If I can do more, that's great. If it doesn't, my life is not over.
We can open it up now for questions. Maybe if we could start with questions and kind of shift into comments a little bit later, but if people have questions, sure.
How long do you normally get to rewrite portions of your novel, or your novel?
Yeah.
Do you have a time frame that you want?
I'll vocally speak on this because I seem to, and I don't know if it's because I'm down the hall from these people at times.
Seems to keep coming back to that, yeah.
Well, here's the schedule of my book right now. This one just came out on 2/22 of this year. Technically, I was supposed to turn in book 4 on 2/22. Okay? That's when it was due in. And at that time, I'm doing promotion and trying to gear up for promotion, so kind of finishing it so it goes in on deadline while trying to promote book 3 is kind of a hinky area in the first place. But I do it. Although I know my editor well enough, she's not getting to it till at least April. So I said, you know what? It's done, but could I have another month to kind of polish it? Because I know you're not going to read it till then. That said, I made the deadline. That's the important thing first and foremost, making the deadline. But I was like, I'd like it a little tighter. I know I could fix it in rewrites when you give them to me, but I'm like, you're not going to read it till April. It's August now. She's probably going to read it now. And what will happen is, come September, when I want to be working on my other books and my other ideas that are fresh for new material, new books, she's going to come back to me around September 1st and be like, here's what needs changing. I'll see you. How about 2 weeks, 3 weeks? And she'll be like, fix it. And God forbid something's terribly broken in it. I've had that happen too, where like something just did not gel in the book, and they're like, we need it soon. And you have to drop everything to really just fix it, build it up from scratch. I think it's definitely made a better book for me. But I find that those deadlines, when they come to me, you might be able to negotiate some stuff for some time, but they're usually not a lengthy time I've found ever in the rewrite process. Because again, you know, they have to go, they have to copy edit it later, and they have to make galleys to send out before it goes on sale for pre-reviews and stuff like that. So then there's a month before they need to actually ship the books as they print them. And so really there's not a ton of time happening there, a huge window for you to do your fixes.
One of the things that I think people don't realize at first is that the time lag in this business is absurd. You know, by the time this book, when I first started pitching it to John, who's John Helfers is an editor here at the Writers Symposium, he and I went back for the better part of a year before we finally said, you know, yeah, I'm going to buy this. This is good. He bought it, then sent me his full edit. I'm pretty quick at getting through these things because, again, the academic training has allowed me to kind of get through this stuff pretty quickly. Got it back to him. He said, great. We did a couple of other little tweaks, and then that was that. And that was like a year before the book itself came out, because then it had to go into final galleys, and they had to go through that, and they send you those, and you have to say, please don't misspell my name on the first page of the book or something. That didn't happen. But I'm saying, you know, stuff that's very sort of obvious, you have to send it back to them. Then they send you a final confirmation copy. Meanwhile, the cover stuff is coming through. You know, so by the time you actually get the book published, and people are like, so, you know, tell us more about your new book. Like, my new book? I've been working on this for, you know, freaking forever. And even if, as you always should be, are writing new material while this is going on, like I had to always talk about, you know, promoting one book while you're writing the next, still, this particular book has gone through a long process. So for me, it, you know, I didn't really have too much trouble with the deadline. It was more the wait, you know, on the other end to actually see the final product. But also, you know, as my career ramps up and I'm writing more and more and more and more now, that time frame is going to be sort of decreased. So there's going to be more pressure on me. And I'm sure that, you know, I don't know what for you, I mean, what's the time frame for you like in terms of how long you have to get edits back and all that kind of stuff?
It's varied for each book. I mean, for my first book, I had a lot of time. The first book, Crystal Rain, we went back and forth over a year with it, playing around with getting it just right. It was my first book. With my second novel, I turned it in. It was a crazy, crazy period because I was pushing the edge of the deadline that my editor needed to get it into publication. So I think we had like 3 or 4 weeks for the edits on that one. And we were doing a lot of editing on it. So I remember in the case of that second book, we had a situation where even all of a sudden my agent suddenly, or either my agent or my editor suddenly said, you know, like, that last chapter could really use a whole different direction.
Oh, good.
You know, and I was like, what? Why is this coming out now? You know, and then, you know, call the other person, the agent or the editor, I forget which, and say, you know, the agent slash editor just said this. What do you think? Yeah, now that they say that, I do think I have to agree with them. Oh, crap. So the weekend before it had to be turned in, wow, I wrote a whole new last chapter. Wow. I was at a convention. I was sitting in a seat like you guys were with my laptop listening to Maureen McHugh lecture. Maureen McHugh, Nancy Kress, and someone else were talking about characters and plotting. I wanted to hear it, but I also had to turn in this chapter by Monday morning, so I was sitting there typing away while listening to them say fascinating things on the lecture, going like, wow, I hope this chapter is better than the other one. And they really liked it. They're like, okay, this is cool. But it was like one of those moments where you're like, wow, I've got the weekend.
Pressure's
on me.
And it is weird. The turnaround is not any better for the anthologies than in the books. I mean, I will literally get calls where, you know, they'll say, you know, I'm editing this anthology. I did not invite you to be in it. Always a good start. And then they say, but I'm, you know, somebody died or whatever, and I'm 7,000 words short, and I need a short story on this topic in a short amount of time. And rush, 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 rush. You know, and you turn it in you know, the whatever time they give you. And my shortest is 7 hours. For a short story in an anthology.
How long was it supposed to be?
It was about 4,000 words.
Okay.
All right.
You know?
Good stuff.
Sit down, come up with 3 ideas, pick one, research it, sit on a typewriter, finish it, set it aside for a half an hour, give it a polish, send it off. I mean, that's what I had to do. And, you know, and I did one of those one time, and it's kind of like, and it goes in rush, 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 and then, you know, whoop, here's your contract, here's your money. Nothing for 2 years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then it's, here's the galley. We need them on Tuesday.
You do have this image that they sort of, you get that they get it, and then they sort of do like the Clockwork Man and the Wizard of Oz, you know, where they go, chuk, 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 you know, and then someone finally goes, we should wind them up. Chuk, chuk, chuk. Oh, galleys now. You know, you wonder what's like, it's not happening. They're all working. They're all doing very busy things. But from the author's perspective, since there's this then wall of silence between when you send it in to when you get it back, and if you send something like, is everything okay? Oh, yeah, we're fine, just working, if you get that. When they then reemerge to say, by the way, you know, it's almost this mystical process. You know, we come bearing the almost finished manuscript, please. Do these last edits.
Well, and then after you do the galleys, it can be 9 months or whatever before the book comes out.
Right.
You know,
situation where it's a very, very slow business, punctuated by periods of like
madness.
You know, madness of like, oh my gosh, this has to be done now,
yeah.
Then long periods of
inactivity. It's like what they describe Texas Hold'em poker, which is like 5 hours of boredom and 3 minutes of utter terror, you know?
Yes.
And you're all in. Like, that's more or less, that's kind of what we're talking
about.
That
is how it kind of feels like sometimes.
We should take another, because we're running low on time. Another question from people? I saw.
Sure. When you're creating new material, when you're sitting down to write, how much of that is actually writing new material and as opposed to editing stuff that you've previously done? Say, the editing, time clock, or is it better?
Just quickly to speak for myself, I personally prefer to save editing for another time, because for me, it is very dangerous. The one great benefit of the modern computer, modern word processor, is that you can go back and edit stuff very quickly without having to go back through reams of paper. It's very quick to do a search and find what you need. But for the most part, I try to avoid doing that when I'm writing stuff down, especially for the first time or the first draft, because I find that it gets in the way of my getting out ideas that I need to have, and I will have time to go back and incorporate that commentary later on. So that, for me, I try to keep them separate. I don't know what...
I try to get the whole book down. I just keep charging forward blindly. I'll go back to look and see if I mentioned a certain thing.
Yeah.
Or at best, I'll make a quick double dollar sign note there, like, oh yeah, I now have a character who never existed. Put so-and-so in the book now! And then I'll move on quickly, but I don't have time to go back, because it does kill the steam for me going forward. And once I'm there, once I see the totality and have an idea of where it flows, where it goes up and down, then I say, ah, now I see what's missing. This stuff that's all awesome here really needs to be, and because I know it's going to edit a lot. And if I start editing here, and then I get to here for myself, I'm then going to have to re-edit my edit. And I can't go that way. My brain will just explode.
Yeah, I can edit on the train, on my commute, so I definitely keep editing apart from the time that I'm writing. And I've done the writing both ways. I've gone through and written and you know, redone chapter one as I do chapter two, and then redone chapter one and two as I do chapter three. The last book I wrote, I was on a pretty tight deadline, and I just didn't think I had the time to deal with that. And so I actually wrote the entire book without ever reading any of the previous chapters at any point before I got to the end. And then I polished the whole thing for a few weeks. And
I'm starting to fall into a pattern of something similar. I used to continuously revise as I wrote. You know, like you said, doing chapter one, then revising chapter one and writing chapter two, then writing chapter three and revising one and two. I hit a point where I was some people had reviewed parts of my book, my first book, and they'd there were two camps of people. Some people really liked the first half of the book, which is actually slightly edited, actually way more edited than the second half of the book, which I fell into a rhythm and just kind of wrote. And my editor actually even marked up the first half less than the second half. The second half is almost near first draft. The first half is like more like three or four drafts. So after that, on my second book, I kind of went all in on the first draft method, just get to the end and then go back and edit. And the markups were evenly distributed throughout the book. And so I thought, from my own like energy perspective, how much time and effort it takes, I think I'll just move to that method. And that's pretty much where I am now, where I just write and then I go back to edit. But I do, like, go back and check, you know, like, to get back into the mood and figure out how things are going, like, what I was doing in previous chapters. Like, did I mention this in a previous chapter?
Yeah.
And I don't fix it in the previous chapter now. I just make a note to go back and fix it.
And I think it's also helpful to get distance, too, when you finished it and not immediately dive back in, but give yourself, and for everyone it's different. Sometimes it's a couple hours or a day or a couple days. I normally take, after I finish a first draft, I'll take a couple of days where I don't do that, and I sort of, you know, do nothing but hang out with the family, play video games, relax, like do nothing at all related to writing. And then when I come back to it, I can pick it up again. Because otherwise your brain space, I think, can't sort of handle that. There's slightly different muscles, editing and writing. And so it's a different kind of component that you have to deal with at that time. And speaking of time, we need to beat the clock here as well. So thank you guys all very much. If you haven't brought up tickets, please do that. Thanks.